Hello and welcome to episode 56 of the Story Hack Podcast. The Story Hack Podcast features action, adventure, and mystery stories, mostly from the public domain. Story Hack is also a print magazine which publishes new action and adventure stories in a wide variety of genres. Visit storyhack.com today for more information. Today we will hear Smoke by Ward Hawkins. This story originally appeared in the August 1939 issue of Thrilling Adventures. Extensive research discovered no evidence of copyright renewal.
Smoke by Ward Hawkins. "You've got to be careful, Steve," Hugh MacDonald, the district supervisor, said to Ranger Steve Birch. "We don't want our record spoiled by a fire this late in the season." There was a deep affection for the older man in Birch's good brown eyes. He pushed back from the breakfast table and began to clear it. "Quit worrying," Birch said. "I'll tell you what. We've got two more days of fishing season, and I'll bet you a new hat for Carrie we'd get through them without a fire." "It's a graft," MacDonald growled. "I thought I was through buying hats for my daughter when you married her. But I'll take you. It's worth it." A cabin door slammed open suddenly, and a big man stood there. He looked at them out of small, cold eyes. "My name's Jones," he said. "I'd like to hire a guide." Behind Jones, Birch saw another man, tall and blonde, with a strange, bitter look around his mouth and eyes. They were both dressed in new, stiff outdoor clothes. Fishermen. Birch had seen hundreds like them in the past month. "Sorry," Birch said. "We can't give you a guide." The heavy face of Jones took on a sullen cast. "I'll pay," he said, and drew a roll of bills from his pocket. Birch stiffened slightly. His voice lost some of its cordiality, but was still controlled. "No. You see, we can't furnish guides for everyone, so we make a practice of saying no. I'll give you a pass, though, and you'll find the trail well marked. If you get lost, we'll find you in a hurry. There's no danger. You just have to spend an extra day or so in the woods, that's all." "Time is important," the big man said. Birch was vaguely aware of a tenseness in Supervisor MacDonald's silence. He wondered at it, and saw MacDonald get easily to his feet and move to the back of the cabin. "Sorry," Birch said doggedly to the big man. "I can't help you. Give you $100. "No."
"$500, then."
"No."
A grin, and the big man's voice hadn't changed. A hot refusal was on the tip of Birch's tongue when MacDonald's voice sliced through the silence thin and clear. "Put up your hands." Startled, Birch swung in his chair to see the district supervisor holding a rifle in tight hands. The rifle bore directly on Jones' stomach. "Mac." Birch gasped, then looked at the big man. Somehow, the pouches under Jones' eyes had stiffened. His face had become lined and cold. His hands crawled up to his shoulders. "Sure, you'd pay plenty for a guide," MacDonald rasped. "And time's important, all right. You robbed the Jasper City Bank and killed the cashier last night. I got that over the radio early this morning at headquarters. This was supposed to be your getaway, but it's as far as you go."
"You think so?" the big man said. A sudden shower of falling glass jerked Birch's head to the window. A hairy paw holding a gun appeared through the break. MacDonald swung the gun at Way desperately, but too late. The gun in the window spat flame and roared. MacDonald's head snapped back, a gun clattered from his nerveless fingers, and he crashed to the floor. An ugly hole was under his right eye. The back of his head was nothing at all. His body jerked several times and then was still. Birch stared at MacDonald's still body for several long seconds. His mind would not believe what his eyes had seen. It had happened too quickly, too simply. A short moment ago, MacDonald had been talking to him. And now MacDonald was dead. A moaning curse jerked through Birch's mouth. He threw himself at the big man blindly, unthinkingly. There was no room for thought in his mind. No room for anything but that insane curtain of red. Vaguely, he felt his fist connect with bone, felt the bone crunch under his knuckles. A voice boomed a startled curse. Hands clutched at him, bore him down. A tremendous weight came down on his chest. He struck out blindly at the face that hovered above him. A man grunted in pain. Twisting, he managed to free one leg and lashed out a booted foot. The boot struck something solidly,
and a voice made a shrill whining sound. But that was the last for Birch. He stopped trying to fight, tried to protect himself from the unending attack of fists and guns. Finally, even that was impossible. There was nothing but the ceaseless shock of blows and the closing curtain of darkness. The big man said, "Come on, come on. Snap out of it." Birch felt himself dragged up by rough hands. He was held in that position by the slack of his shirt. Dimly, he could see the big man's face close to him. It was only a hazy disk, but the eyes burned out of it with a small red glare. The nose was oddly shaped and something red spilled from it across his mouth to stain his shirt front. Jones cursed dully, struck Birch across the mouth. Birch's head snapped loosely across his shoulder, rolled back. Jones said, "Want some more?" Birch could only stare at him. He knew now this man was not Jones, but Joe Riddack. The blonde one was Bishop. The one at the window, Tonelli, everyone had heard of them. They were public enemies. They had robbed a bank, killed a cashier, killed MacDonald. "I want a guy," Riddack rasped, "and that's you. You going to play ball, or do we start over? We like to play games, too." Steve Birch nodded, not trusting words past his teeth. "Okay, then." Riddack shoved him toward the limp body of MacDonald. "The first thing you do is get rid of the old guy. Haul him off in the brush. Tony'll go with you." Birch glared redly at Riddack across the dead body of the old man. His eyes were not quite sane. Tears trickled down his face. Not tears of grief, but madness, Riddack cursed and walked toward him. Steve Birch bent quickly and snatched the old man from the floor. He held him tightly and went out of the cabin. Tony Ortonelli was a short man with small, bowed legs and tremendous, rounded shoulders. A half-vacant smile always curled his fleshy lips. His eyes were small and red and ape-like, and they never seemed to take an interest in anything. He followed Steve Birch into the woods. Leaving the body of the old man behind a log, Birch thought how still and quiet the old man's face was. It was relaxed and stared up at Birch blankly. Birch felt that he should say something before he covered it and went away. But as his mind groped for words, Tonelli's gun prodded him back toward the cabin. He had to clean the cabin, clean the blood off the floor, and set the cabin straight so no one would know what had happened. He did that and made out a pass for these men. They tried to argue with him about the date. He gave it up, finally, and wrote what they told him to. Then they all went outside. Birch led the way off down the skyline trail. Riddack followed close behind him, then Bishop, then Tonelli. It was a long morning and the sun was hot. The familiar rise and turn of the trail and the sun on his back and all the rest of the things he had come to know helped Birch back to normal. There was a relief in exertion, an escape for the pressure that clouded his mind. By noon he was again normal. They ate in silence. Birch was aware of Riddack's eyes following his every move. Strangely, the glance didn't seem angry. In fact, there was nothing personal about it at all. The killer might have been thinking about most anything. Birch knew that it wouldn't make any difference to that face, ugly now with a swollen, bluish nose, whether the mind behind it was thinking of murder or not. The face would not reveal the thought. Finally, Riddack said, "How long will it take to get through?" Birch was surprised he could answer. "It's 40 miles, he said thickly. "Sometime tomorrow night is a guess. We'll make it by early evening." "Maybe," Birch said. "What if I take you out and lose you?" "You won't. We'll get there, or else see what I mean." The argument seemed senseless, but Birch went on. "What's the difference? I won't live to tell about it either way. Why not take it now?" "We'll let you go if we can find a way to keep your mouth shut for a couple of hours." "I bet you will, but it doesn't make any difference. You won't get away. Even if you do get to the pass, there'll be guards there looking for you." Riddack laughed, his head tipped back and his bruised mouth gaped his amusement. Birch would have liked to put his hands on that working throat. He thought it would feel very good. But Riddack stopped laughing then and leaned forward. "Listen," he sneered. "You can't think of anything I haven't thought of and figured on. I made you date our passes day before yesterday, didn't I? So that made us appear in the timber at the time the bank was knocked over. There'll be a bunch of other fishermen going out at the same time, because this is the end of the season. They'll look at our passes, see the date, and let us through.
Nice, eh?
I suppose so, Birch admitted.
You suppose so, Riddack snorted.
Hell, it's perfect.
It was perfect, all right.
Steve Birch knew that as well as Riddack. They would get through, and then there would be no way of catching them again. And if they did, it would be Birch's own fault. He shouldn't have given them the passes.
If he could get away, he could go on ahead and warn the guards.
He looked at Bishop with this idea in mind.
Bishop was watching him out of washed-out blue eyes. The thin, bitter smile still curved his lips. And besides, there was Tinelli. The ape-like man was lying on his stomach. He hadn't been listening to what they said. His face was close to something he held under his hairy paws, and he was crooning softly from deep in his chest. Small, squeaking noises came from under his hands. And no wonder he was pulling the legs off a field mouse.
No, Birch couldn't get away.
He'd have to string along and wait, and hope something would happen that would give him a chance.
Riddack said, "So you think we won't make it? Does that mean you're going to get us lost?"
Birch had decided. He said, "Why should I? They don't pay me to risk my neck. I'm a ranger, not a cop."
"That's the stuff," Riddack chuckled.
"He's a smart kid, eh, Bishop?"
"Sure," Bishop agreed.
Tinelli looked up and echoed, "Smart."
Birch stood up.
"We better get going. We've got to highball to get to the pass by tomorrow evening. And you'll get there. I want to live a while yet."
Riddack laughed as he slid into his pack straps.
"You'll live, kid, if you play square.
Joe Riddack always keeps his word."
Steve Birch led the way off down the trail. He walked fast, and the gangsters had to struggle to keep up.
It was funny, Birch thought, what a man could say when he had to, and the way he could act. You just went along as though nothing mattered, not even old Mac getting killed, and that hardly made sense.
Birch thought the worst thing would be telling Carrie. It would be hard to tell her that he had seen her father shot through the head, if he ever got a chance to tell her anything. He supposed he should think of a way to ease the shock, but just then there didn't seem to be any way he could.
Well, the least he could do was get even for the old man.
He looked at the three men who followed him.
Get even, that was funny. That was very, very funny.
It didn't occur to Steve Birch until the middle of the afternoon that he was about exhausting the men behind him. He had been in the woods all his life. Walking was part of it. But Riddack, Antonelli, and Bishop were different. They slogged along, sucking breath through their open mouths, as though each one was the last. Sweat made their faces shiny and wet, but they stood it as long as they could. They had to, because it was important, they get out of the reservation early the next evening. That's when the bulk of the fishermen would be leaving. They wouldn't be as noticeable in a crowd. But finally Riddack called a halt.
"Gotta rest," he panted.
"We ain't used to tramping in the heat like this."
Tinelli and Bishop collapsed in their tracks. Bishop took his shoes off and rubbed his feet.
Riddack smoked, and Tinelli lay with his face on the ground. It was all right with Birch. They'd made good time, he realized. Then, thinking of the trail ahead, he remembered the burn that they had to cross.
A forest fire had passed there and had burned out several miles of timber.
He pulled some leaves from a nearby bush and soaked them with his canteen and put them in his hat.
Riddack said, "What's that for?"
"Keeps your head cool," Birch answered. "We're going to cross some burned-off land in a little while, and the sun will be blistering hot."
"Sounds good. What kind of leaves do you use?"
"Any kind. Those there will work."
Riddack stripped leaves from a small bush and put them in his hat.
Bishop and Tinelli did the same and used the same kind of leaves.
Steve Birch watched them, wondering why he didn't laugh out loud. But he didn't. He pushed himself up.
"Let's go," he said.
"Time's a-wasting."
They came to the burn in about 15 minutes. It was all Birch had said it would be. There were no trees, only blackened stumps thrust up like ugly hands. The sun seemed to reflect off the ashes like heat from a stovetop, and the dust curled up from the slogging feet to sting their eyes and throats. There was heat, plenty of heat, and exertion to bring the sweat cascading down their faces. Night found them well into the timber on the far side of the burn. The gangsters dropped exhausted when Steve Birch gave the word.
They did not help him make camp or cook. The ranger stopped in his work now and then to scratch his forehead and curse.
Redak saw him, said,
"You itchin' too? What causes it?"
"No see ums," Birch answered.
"They're little bugs like mosquitoes, only so small you can hardly see them.
They tied him up that night because, as Redak said, there's no use tackin' chances."
The three gangsters went to sleep at once, dead, almost, from utter exhaustion. But Steve Birch lay awake. It was a long night for him. There were so many things to think about. Carrie, mostly, and old Mac. He knew it was no good thinking, that he ought to close his mind to the whole mess and sleep, but it wasn't that easy. So he lay there watching the moon come up and ride across the treetops, and somehow the night noises were a lot of company. Redak woke shortly after the first light, and Birch was glad, because that put an end to the waiting. He squirmed around to look at the gangster, who started cursing, first in puzzlement, then in fear, then in the white heat of anger. His face was no longer a face. Instead, it was an ugly caricature. The flesh was red and angry and swollen beyond all recognition. A swelling had squeezed his eyes into two tightly closed slits. Redak poured at them, staggered up blindly. The sound of Redak's rage woke Bishop, and his face was as bad or worse than Redak's. At least he was just as blind. Donnelly grumbled and growled sleepily and rolled over on his back. Redak's roar jerked him to his feet. There was nothing wrong with him. Though his face was a little red and swollen, it wasn't enough to matter. His eyes were bright and unaffected. He looked at Redak and Bishop and swore in amazement.
"Bishop!"
Redak bellowed. "Can you see?"
"God, no, I'm blind."
"Tonelli, where the hell are you?" "That damned ranger. Tony, answer me."
"Tonelli," said Cheese Boss, "what happened?"
"Can you see?"
"Sure, I can see good. But what the hell?"
Redak's voice fogged up. "Where's that damned ranger? Can he see?"
Tonelli peered at Steve Birch. Then he said, "He's tied up where we left him. He's all right, his face ain't a bit swollen."
"That's it,"
Redak moaned.
"It's those damned leaves. Tony, find my hat and tell me what those leaves look like.
They're shiny and about medium size.
Now get the rangers. What are they like?"
"Nothing like ours. They're big and not shiny."
It was about all Redak could stand. He stood there making queer, choking sounds deep in his chest. None of them meant anything, really, but to Steve Birch they meant a lot. He had known his simple little plan had failed when he saw Tonelli. Finally, Redak said, "Bring him to me, Tony."
"Leave him tied."
Tonelli lifted Birch and carried him to Redak. Redak fumbled for the ranger, caught his jacket, and pulled him close. Then his big hands crawled upward to the ranger's throat. They stopped there, closed steadily, relentlessly. Birch was helpless. The fingers tightened, and suddenly, there was no air to breathe. He struggled feebly, but only because the desire for air numbed his brain and made him fight instinctively. There was really no use struggling. The hands released him, finally, but he was beyond knowing it. His world had vanished into darkness. A world born again, under the repeated impact of Tonelli's hand. Dimly, he heard Redak saying, "Wake him up. Wake him up. He's got to get us out of this."
"He's coming out of it," Boss Tonelli said.
"Here, let me get my hands on him." Redak caught Birch and dragged him up. He had to hold him, because the ranger couldn't stand alone.
"What you do to us?"
Birch tried to answer once and couldn't. His throat felt like it was squeezed close. "Finally," he whispered, "poison oak. The leaves were poison oak." Redak whimpered and struck the ranger across the face. Tonelli picked Birch up again and carried him back to Redak. Redak said, "Can you make us see again?"
"No," Birch said. "There's nothing you can do."
"There has to be. Why didn't Tony get it?"
"It doesn't bother some people. I don't know why."
Redak shook Birch in sudden, helpless anger. "There's got to be something. You'd better think of something." He stopped suddenly, and in a different tone said, "Would you tell me if there was?"
The ranger didn't answer.
"Ha!" Redak grunted. "You guys are around that stuff all the time, so you'd be sure to know a way to fix it. I'll get it out of you. Tony, here, make it sing. Tony freed one of the ranger's hands and held it in his own. The pressure was light at first. Gradually it strengthened. The ranger sank to the ground. His face became gray and streaked with sweat. I can do it, he finally moaned. Red X said, how? And stop the pressure. Birch didn't answer till he caught his breath. His hand didn't hurt much. It felt queer and numb, but at least he could think he had to think of something. He said, smoke. Smoke will do it. That's what we use for smoke. I thought so, Riddack grunted. Untie him, Tony. And listen, kid. It'd better work. It will, Birch told him. It always has. Tonelli watched Birch as the ranger built a fire and rigged a blanket over it so the smoke would go in Riddack's and Bishop's faces. And Tonelli had a gun. If it hadn't been for that, Birch might have made a break for it. As it was, he just fed the fire green fir boughs and made the smoke curl upward in a thick column. He showed Riddack and Bishop where to sit, said, it'll take a couple of hours before it begins to work. You got a bad dose. Riddack and Bishop stood it very well the first hour. They coughed and swore a lot, but that was all. Tonelli squatted on his haunches a few feet away from Birch. He swiveled the gun back and forth, following the ranger's movements. By the end of the next half hour, Riddack became impatient. Bishop, too, was complaining. Hell, this ain't doing any good. Riddack's face was twisted horribly under the sweat and soot. It had better work, he said hoarsely. By God, it better. And Steve Birch was sweating, too. Something had to happen pretty quick. Then he saw the movement on the trail. Suddenly, he exploded into action. He jerked a burning branch from the fire and threw it at Tonelli. Tonelli spilled backward. Birch jumped after him and kicked at the gun. The gun went flying off in the brush. Then he yelled, Riddack, Bishop, Tonelli. Riddack and Bishop lurched up from the fire. Riddack staggered around with his hands outstretched. Bishop screamed, what's happened? What's happened? The kid's gone crazy. Tony, hold him, let me get my hands on that double-crossin'. Birch couldn't wait to think. Tonelli was scuttling toward him. Birch tried to get away, but he couldn't. Tonelli's big hands caught him like a rabbit. Of course, he fought. He hammered rapid, futile blows into Tonelli's face. And then he felt himself lifted and spun in the air. He tried to brace himself for the crash against the ground. The shock left him stunned, unable to move. Tonelli picked him up again and threw him down again. A rifle cracked, unexpectedly, from across the clearing. Tonelli stopped in mid-stride, clutching at his chest. He knelt down slowly. Finally, he laid down across the ranger, slowly, as if he hurt inside. He didn't move after that. He never moved again. He was dead. Tony! Riddack yelled. Tony! Birch twisted to see a solitary, green-clad figure emerge from the trees. The figure moved to Riddack's side. Riddack stood rigid and still. The man in green laid down his rifle with slow care. He slugged Riddack in back of the jaw. Riddack crumpled to the ground. Bishop was lying face down, his head covered with his hands. The man in green jerked the hands down and bound them tightly. He dragged Bishop to Riddack and tied the two together back to back in a sitting position. Then he went and lifted the lifeless body of Tonelli from Steve Birch. The face of the man in green was pale and strained. Somehow, he managed a tight grin. I don't know what started it, Steve, he hussed, but it's all over now. Steve Birch couldn't help himself. He couldn't hold the crazy laughter that tore at his throat, and he didn't try. It felt good, and it released that horrible tightness in his stomach. He let it go and really laughed. Riddack's head rolled loosely as he came to. He muttered senselessly and finally started cursing. Birch looked at him and giggled and bit his lip to stop it. He crawled over to Riddack and said, smoked it, your poison oak. That's a laugh. Do you know what that smoke did? It brought Tom Terry. Smoke like that in the fire season will bring a ranger anywhere in the district in 2 hours. And Steve Birch laughed again.
The End of Smoke by Ward Hawkins. This is the end of episode 56. If you enjoy the classic stories here on the podcast, You will love the new fiction we have published. We have many magazine issues and anthologies to check out. Please visit storyhack.com today to check it all out. Thank you for listening.